We promise you Dustin Dupirak from the Indianapolis Star. We deliver you Dustin Dupirak from the Indianapolis Star at Dustin Dupirak on the Twitterverse, the beat writer for Pacers basketball. Good afternoon, buddy. How are you?
Good afternoon, Glass. Doing well, my man. Thanks for having me.
Well, I always appreciate it because we go to the source of all the knowledge if we want to talk NBA in June. And that's what, well, there are no off seasons anymore, buddy. You know this. 365 days of fun. And the NBA draft was last week. The Pacers had a bunch of picks, a bunch of grand plans and ideas. And when the dust settled, they got a couple extra picks, got a couple extra bucks in the bank for the salary cap. And it appears they got everyone they wanted. But let's start with my audience, Dustin. Why not Trayce Jackson-Davis? Well, the simple answer is because the pick they made at number 8 does exactly the same thing, but there wasn't much mutual interest there. Let's start with TJD. Well, he's heading to Golden State, and the Pacers are fine with that, and so is the big left-hander.
Yeah, the big thing, so a couple pieces there. I mean, the number one issue, it wasn't that there was a problem between the two or that they don't like him or he doesn't like them. The issue is the Pacers have too many centers, and the Pacers view him as a center, and I think at this point, Trayce largely views himself as a center at this point. I mean, I think it's certainly possible for him to become a player that more fits what the power forward mold is in the NBA at this point. Obviously, that has changed over time. Obviously, there are a few sort of bigger four men in the NBA. I mean, the Cavaliers play with two bigs, with Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, but there's not a lot of teams that do that, and if you do, you're generally playing slow. You know, you generally need your four men to be able to handle on the perimeter, shoot from outside, defend on the wing, all those kinds of things, because, you know, among the guys that are power forwards in this league are Jason Tatum, Jimmy Butler, LeBron James, Kevin Durant. Like, you got to be able to guard, you got to be able to handle, you got to be able to shoot at that position. Now it's almost like the three used to be is what the four is now. So he at this point is operating as a small ball five, and I think he can be a really, really good one. I think that's why the Warriors like him so much. But the Pacers have a lot of those as backups as is. I mean, they already had a logjam at that position last year. You had all these issues, especially when Daniel Tice came back, about, okay, well, when are you going to get Jalen Smith minutes? When are you going to get Isaiah Jackson minutes? And that ended up cutting into everybody, and Tice only ended up playing 7 games before they were like, hey, we got to make these two young guys more of a priority. You know, hopefully, you know, I'm sure they'll probably try to move him in the next, you know, week or 2 weeks or so to see if there's any interest out there just to kind of clear up some space. And so, but all the same, it's still 4 centers on the roster. Start with Miles Turner, who's obviously the starter, and that's not going to change. And so if you were to bring another one, obviously you would, you know, create an even bigger logjam. So, but at 47, they could have, in theory, taken him and made him a two-way, but it sounded like Trayce Jackson-Davis wasn't interested in that, basically. That was really the issue was, you know, the Pacers had some interest in bringing him on as a two-way, so he'd spent a lot of the year going back and forth between the Mad Ants and the Pacers, and Jackson-Davis wanted more of a guaranteed contract and wanted to be up with the league the entire time. Being with the Warriors allows them to do that. They don't have a ton of bigs. They don't have a lot of depth at the five, you know, after Kevon Looney. And, you know, the presumption is they're probably going to be able to re-sign Draymond Green, even though he opted out and will command a bigger contract. It seems like they're going to be able to make that happen. All the same, there's going to be some minutes, especially in the regular season, for Jackson-Davis with the Warriors, where there would be fewer with the Pacers, and, you know, he doesn't have to go on a two-way. And again, that's just the biggest thing, is he didn't feel like it made a lot of sense for him to spend a lot of time in the G League. I think there's an argument for him there to go develop more power forward skills in games that don't count, because I think the biggest reason why he never took threes or did a lot of perimeter work was he cared about the games that mattered. He wanted to make sure he was doing the right thing by his team. It would make some sense for development purposes for him to play in games that don't count or that don't matter. Basically, no one really cares if you win the G League or not. but you know, that was the discrepancy. It wasn't about like, well, you know, Trayce Jackson-Davis doesn't want to wear a Pacers uniform or the Pacers don't like him. Chad Buchanan made a point of saying multiple times on Friday, hey, we love Trayce the person. I've talked to other people around the organization. I mean, they really like him personally, and it's almost impossible not to. He's going to be a great teammate, and I think he'll be able to stay in the pros for a long time because he's going to fit into any locker room. He's certainly intelligent enough to employ whatever system plays, whatever you want to do. You know, so there was a lot of light, you know, sort of mutual respect there, but it was just really a roster situation, and, you know, being the only basically way to bring him in was on a two-way, and that just wasn't something that Jackson-Davis was interested in.
Dustin Dupirak from the Indy Star, the Pacers writer at IndyStar.com, at Dustin Dupirak on the Twitterverse. And, well, let's talk about who the Pacers did bring in. With pick number 8, they moved up a pick to get a couple extra second round picks in there, and still got their got their man Jairus, or is it Jairus? I think it's Jairus, isn't it?
It's Jairus, yeah.
Jairus Walker from Houston. He's a baby. He's only played 1 year of college basketball. He was a big-time recruit for Kelvin Sampson at the University of Houston. And that's another piece in that puzzle that, well, the Pacers already drafted somebody in that spot. 6'8", I don't know if the offense was limited because of the good team around him at Houston, but obviously the Pacers taking him at number 8 and getting a couple extra picks out of the deal. That was in quite a few mock drafts. So mission accomplished?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I think I viewed it as there were going to be four guys that they could have the options of. They ended up with three of them on the board. I thought there would only be two. You know, I think Oscar Thompson was kind of part of their thought process, even though he didn't come out for a workout. He ends up going 5 to the Pistons, so he's the only guy on the board. It was basically between Walker, Taylor Hendricks, and Cam Whitmore, who ended up sliding all the way to the Rockets at 20. I mean, I think Hendricks and Walker were pretty even. I think they had very similar just general styles of playing, defensive-oriented forwards who could really guard multiple positions. Hendricks was a little bit of a better shot blocker, has a little bit more length. Walker's got a little bit more muscle. And I think, you know, I think he had a little bit more variety in his offensive game. Hendricks is a little better shooter. Hendricks was close to 40% from three. Walker was more around 34. But I think they really like a lot of the capacity for Walker. I mean, they like him as a passer. They like how he handles the ball. They like his willingness to go to the hole. He's not as good of a finisher as you'd like him to be, but there's certainly an ability there to get better. And they think the shot, they feel pretty good about the shot. Again, Hendricks is a little bit further along there. But I think they like him more as a rebounder, more of his capacity for rebounding, just because he's got a bit more muscle. He's not a wide body, but you know, he's got a little bit more to him than Hendricks does. And I think that will eventually, you know, work out. Basically, there has been sort of a push for him to be a little bit more assertive from his coaches at both IMG and at Houston. But they think that's going to come around. Obviously, he's only 19. But they like a lot of what he does. They like the personality. He's really a selfless, you know, pretty selfless guy. You know, really always liked to get his other teammates involved. He played at IMG, was sort of really good at, you know, picking a role there as all the various superstars he played with, from Keontae George. Who else was on that team? Jet Howard. You know, before that, it was Moussa Diabate. It was Jeremiah Robinson Earl. He was on a team with Tamar Bates. If he was injured that year, didn't play very much. But I mean, he played some point guard. He was basically willing to do whatever he wanted, even though he came in there, was a 4-year guy, was one of the top rated players as an 8th grader, and went over there, but was really sort of good at just involving his other teammates and not feeling like he was the guy. So they think that really fits their culture well, and he'll be sort of an easy fit into this group. And so he was definitely a guy they targeted. They loved his workout. They liked his performance at the combine. He didn't do any of the scrimmaging at the combine, but he measured well and tested really well, had one of the highest verticals in the league, you know, in the combine there. So, I mean, they like a lot of the physical attributes. They like a lot of the mental attributes. They like a lot of parts of his game. They needed a power forward, desperately needed some size there, and they got it with a guy who's, you know, in without shoes, as they were measuring him, is about 6'6.25", 7'2.5" wingspan, right around 250 pounds and all of the muscle. So there's a lot there that they like.
Be nice if he was a couple inches taller, but if he was, he would have been the first pick in the draft, or behind Webb and Yama. That would have been the other side of it. We know you have to play defense and rebound for Kelvin Sampson, so that's not going to be a huge, that, again, we're not going to solve any issues or worry about any issues on that side of it. With the 26th pick, Ben Shepherd from Belmont. Now, I love these stories, and I want you to help me here, because this is the one where we've been watching this kid for 42 years, and we know. Tell me why they took Ben Shepherd, because they know Buddy Hield's not going to last forever, right?
I mean, that's part of it, and that's certainly part of the issue, but there's things that Shepherd gives you that even if you had Hield, you know, he adds something to it. Even if you keep Buddy, you know, Shepherd isn't just sort of a direct replacement there. I mean, he is he's a pretty good shooter, really good shooter, was 41.5% last year at a pretty high volume, but he's at a different level there. I mean, like, you know, I mean, he's proven beyond proven as far as being an outside shooter. But Shepherd's further on defensively. He was all Missouri Valley this year as a defender. Buddy Hield has never been all defensive anything anywhere.
No, he's not. And he will not wherever he ends up down the road. No, so he's more like Neesmith than he is like Hield. Would that be an accurate?
A touch. I mean, Neesmith is just, you know, he just really had to become a tougher player when he went to Boston, and that was the way he had to get on the floor. So, I mean, I would say there's something to be said for that. Obviously, Nesmith is very, very streaky as a shooter, but is, you know, just a really tough, tough player. You know, Rick Carlisle uses the term soldier, and I don't know if I would. Shepherd's not that as muscular as Nesmith is. I mean, like, there's some growth to that guy. I mean, there's a reason why he was at least functional and power forward. He was clearly undersized, but I mean, there was a reason why he was able to hang. There's a lot to him, you know, basically. I mean, he plays with force and physicality. You know, the guy's pretty muscled up at this point. So, but there's some things there. I mean, there are things that Nesmith has that Hield doesn't, that Shepherd does. I mean, again, he's a better defender, really good at getting in passing lanes. You know, really good man-to-man guy, can really, you know, you could put him anywhere 1-3 and he'll be in good shape there, can guard point guards, you know, that kind of thing. So, and they need to just get better man-to-man defense. And he definitely helps. I mean, so he's definitely useful if you do move on from Buddy in a year, or even if you move on from Buddy this offseason, he's helpful in helping you plug that hole. Again, he's not going to be a guy who's going to, I don't imagine that as a, you know, rookie, he's going to walk in the door and hit 42% from three on whatever the hell Buddy took, 500 attempts, you know, somewhere right. 600 or somewhere in that range. You know, I don't know that he's going to do that. But he is going to make some shots, and he's going to be able to play some defense, and, you know, you're going to get pretty good value out of him as a 26th pick.
Now, let's be honest. This draft pool stunk. Let's just call it what it is. And
it's apparently going to get worse.
Well, that's
next year it's supposed to be worse.
and we'll worry about that. Well, the Pacers picked the wrong year to fall into the lottery, but that's neither here nor there anymore. But the issue is, we've been telling fans you can't get too excited about pick 26. We've seen guys in the 20s and the high teens that just don't work out. They're there for a reason. They're available for a reason. If they can provide anything great. Again, that's not where you make your hay in the draft most years, is picking in the late 20s. The interesting theory with the Pacers was going into the draft, Dustin DePerrix, our guest, you know his voice by now, Indy Star. The interesting part was, we're going to go in, we've got all these picks, and we don't want them all because we can't get any younger and we can't load up with younger guys. Well, 5 picks went to 4 picks and they're all younger guys. What's next for this roster?
Well, the big part piece is the reason why that they made the specific moves that they made. I mean, the hope, as you were saying, they had all these picks and they were hoping to move them. They were hoping to move up, and basically talked to Chad Buchanan on Friday. And it's like, look, man, wasn't for lack of trying. I mean, we tried to make every move we could make. You know, we tried to move up from 7. We tried to move up from 26 into the 10 and 20 range. We literally called everybody from 10 to 20 and said, hey, what's it going to take to move up? And they were like, you're not.
Because the draft stinks. That's why.
I think, though, everybody, it was not a great draft, but I think, oddly, everybody wanted to hold on to their picks. And I think the reason for that is there was obviously the superstar at the top, and then there were another 2 really good players after that. And then it was sort of a lot of guys that nobody looked at as, this guy's going to change my team, but this guy fits me, and this is the guy I want here, and I'm not interested in rolling the dice and giving it away and seeing if I can get something better later. You know, I think that was sort of what it is. There's a lot of, like, solid, useful guys really going down deep into the second round. I mean, I don't think there's just a whole lot of difference between guys who got picked around 23, 24 and guys who got picked around 50. You know, I mean, Jalen Wilson went 51st. That's an All-American. You know, did a lot of things really well for Kansas. Obviously, Trace goes at 57. You know, he's a useful player. The Pacers get Oscar Tshiebwe, who back-to-back, you know, nation's leading rebounder on a two-way. I mean, there was a lot of guys who could do some things for you, but not a ton of guys that could change the trajectory of your franchise. Obviously, there was one who really, really can, maybe 2 more after that, but it's a lot of other guys that it's like, there might be a risk here, but also a lot of guys that say, okay, this, you can trust that this guy's going to be a player for you. You know, whether he's going to be an all-star is a different story, but this guy helps. And so the issue was, they had a hard time moving anybody off of those picks. They had some interest in picking up Whitmore late. They thought that would be a nice player to have if they could get him at 18. They certainly had interest in him at 7 and then 8, but they had better players on the board. But the problem was, I mean, they had a hard time moving up. They had a hard time turning. They, you know, engaged in a lot of talks about, you know, picking up some sort of more veteran wings. DeAndre Hunter apparently was one that was rumored. OG Anunoby was rumored. You know, a bunch of other, you know, Tobias Harris, Dorian Finney-Smith were a number of veteran wings that they were apparently looking at. Buchanan at least confirmed that he didn't confirm names, but said they were looking at a lot of guys that they thought really fit their timeline and positionally, you know, veteran wing types, and ultimately didn't make any of those deals. Either they were told that those players ultimately weren't really available to them, or they felt like it was too risky of a move.
Yeah, you had overpay.
To move along.
Yeah, if you got overpay,
yeah. They didn't know if they want to give up the 7th pick for it. Do they like, you know, are you going to take a guy that's on an expiring deal or it's going to be on an expiring deal? And do you run the risk of, does it make any sense to take that sort of player and have to trust that you can re-sign him or are going to want to re-sign him? Or would you rather have this, you know, 7th ends up being 8th pick that you really like? And do you want to just roll the dice with that and trust that you're going to be able to develop him, trust he's going to turn into the player that you can see him being, rather than taking the chance on, can you sign this guy in a year? What are you going to have to pay him? How old is he? Is he going to ultimately be a real part of your timeline, or is he going to age out? So there was a lot there, and they ultimately ended up not moving anything. So once they realized they weren't going to move anything, that a lot of their big plans sort of hadn't come together, they had to really consider the roster scenario and say, okay, first off, they have got 12 players who are going to be on contract, you know, as of, you know, Friday, and, you know, only 3 free agents, and I think there's a chance they'll want to sign one of those. So you're going to have those. So how many rookies can you ultimately bring on? And I think the answer they came down to was 2. They're kind of keeping 1 roster spot available. Certainly they can move up more via trades. But this way, you know, and then they move forward. They get the Nuggets pick for the first round from last year, which is actually the pick they got from the Thunder, which is the least favorable of 4 picks that they have. It's really, really confusing. But the point is that it's not going to be the Nuggets pick, which helps because they might run it back and win it again. And you're looking at 29-30. And so, you know, this way it's probably going to end up being in the 20s anyway, because the Clippers are still a playoff team. At least have been, as long as they've got Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, you got to presume that's possible. I'm trying to see who else is in that. And Oklahoma City is obviously on the ascent with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. So, I mean, that you'd be looking at that pick too. But either way, it's probably going to be in the 20 to 25 range rather than the 25 to 30 range.
It's capital. That's what the Pacers need. They need
draft capital. It helps. And they obviously moved back. They got the 40 and they moved back to 47 strictly because once you get past about 45, it's easier to get agents, players to agree to 2 ways. That was the deal. And what they ended up actually doing with 47 and 55, you know, presumably they got Isaiah Wong on a 2-way at 55. And Mojave King is apparently going to play overseas next year. He's a New Zealand native, son of a former American player who moved out to New Zealand to play professional basketball. And so that's where he grew up, in the Australia and then New Zealand area. I think there was some back and forth there. But since he's a foreign player, they can do the stash deal where he's out there and he's not taking up one of those 3 2-ways. So as it stands, they're in a good roster situation where they've got, you know, Wong's going to get one of the 2-ways, Shibuya's going to get another one, and Kendall Brown, who was a 2-way this year, looks like he's going to get that 3rd 2-way. And so then they've got 12 guys on rosters. They're going to have 2 roster spots available for Walker and Shepherd. That leaves 1 open. So they can re-sign one of these free agents. They can go out and get a bigger free agent. Obviously, they can move some other guys to clear up some roster space. I imagine, like I said, I think Daniel Tice will be certainly somebody they'll try to move. We'll see what somebody's willing to give for him. But ultimately, that's why they moved back and moved all the things that they were, so they could get some balance to this roster, balance the classes a little bit, but ultimately still get some talent out of the draft.
They got a ton of money laying around as well, top 5 stashed in the cash department as well. When does free agency start, and should we be sitting on the edge of our chair once Friday rolls around?
Yeah, no, you should definitely be interested. It is, I think, Friday at 5 p.m., I think, is when things open. There's kind of a moratorium on when you can actually sign somebody. Certainly, I guess somebody can agree to it, so we're going to see all kinds of news coming out that nobody can confirm publicly. So that's going to be all kinds of fun, is trying to chase whatever that is down. But, you know, obviously, like you said, they're going to be in a really good position because they're going to go into it with a lot of cap room, and that gives them an opportunity to be a bit of a mover there. Obviously, the big thing they can do is they can go after somebody significant. I mean, I don't think they're going to be a player for sort of the biggest names on the free agent market. And the free agent market is not as big as it used to be because there's all of these things written in the CBA that make it easier for you to keep guys and pay them a lot of money. But, you know, among the guys that are going to be out there, they're not going to be in the James Harden sweepstakes. They're not going to be, you know, going after Draymond Green, or probably not Chris Middleton or some guys like that. But there are, I think, a lot of veteran free agent power forwards that they have every reason to place a call to. You know, Jeremy Grant comes to mind. Harrison Barnes comes to mind. You know, Kyle Kuzma is at least worth a shot. I imagine he's more of a play in a big city type guy, but, you know, it's at least worth calling about him. You know, Cameron Johnson's going to be a restricted free agent. I don't think there's any reason for them not to throw out an offer sheet. It's I think, less of a risk than it was going after Ayton last year, because there's not, you know, an individual guy on this team who you're going to make angry like they did with Miles Turner last year. You can at least take a chance, and if, you know, the Nets match it, then the Nets match it. You know, I think Grant Williams, I think if you kind of can't swing and connect on any of those picks, you know, somebody like a Grant Williams or a Georges Niang is worth looking into.
Who drafted that Niang guy? Who?
That would be the Indiana Pacers, the number 50 pick. So they could still get him for cheap. I mean, they're not going to have to overspend on him to get him back in the fold. But he is a guy that's, I think it's 5 years in a row, he shot better than 40% from three, and that's really good for a guy.
That's proof. That is absolutely
proof. So if you can get him for $5 million or $6 million or $7 million or whatever it's going to be, it doesn't sound like it's going to be a lot. You know, you can draft him and still have a whole bunch of cap room available.
Yeah, it sounds like the Doug McDermott thing from a couple years ago.
Right, exactly. So similar type situation. So I think that, again, they're in good shape. Sorry. They're in good shape leading into free agency. I mean, certainly they don't have to make a move, but there are moves available. There are people they could sign. I'm sure that they're going to look into trade scenarios as well. Imagine a lot of those veteran small forwards that they were talking to around the draft are things they're going to revisit, you know, come back and say, okay, this is the capital we have. Are they going to still be able to do that, even, you know, not being able to ship the number 7 pick anymore? You know, maybe, maybe not. You know, we'll see as far as that's concerned. But I think they'll obviously be getting back into those situations, into those discussions, and at least, again, giving it another shot to see who's still interested and who's not.
Get that dog for a walk, buddy. He's been cooped up all day. Thank you so much for your insider scoop, my man. We'll see what the Pacers bring on, and we'll see how the trade deadline and everything else gets going, and the free agency and all that fun stuff. Come back and talk to us after a nice 4th of July weekend. We'll talk a little summer league as well. How does that sound?
Sounds wonderful, Glass. Thanks so much, man.